You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is AEW All Elite Wrestling Unrestricted, the official AEW podcast. Tony Schiavone and my good friend
Aubrey Edwards.
Why don't you introduce our guest this week? It's a very special one for us.
Very, very special guest. This week, I'm excited to have Darby Allin on the show. So Darby Allin, also from my neck of the woods, Pacific Northwest. He was with Evolve for a long time, I think 2016 through 2018. Big name on the indie circuit. I know he came up to Defy in Seattle a lot. Lucha Libre, AAA, June 2018. Darby, you've got like a super, super impressive resume. Very, very happy to have you today.
Thanks for having me.
So was wrestling the first thing you did, or were there any other, like, I heard maybe you played some sports in high school.
Well, I grew up skateboarding my whole life, and I went to film school, but I'm a film school dropout. So wrestling wasn't the first thing that I did, A, because when I turned 18, I was 120 pounds, and I thought it was like impossible for me to go that route. I just viewed it as like people that were, you know, 6'3", 200 and something. So in my mind, I was like, I'm just going to be this like skate guy in film crazy movies. So I went to film school.
So what aspirations of movies did you want to make? Did you have any type of movie you wanted to make? Horror movies? Didn't matter what?
Documentaries mainly. Just like real life stuff. I was going to make a film based off of Craigslist fetishes.
Ooh.
Wow.
So we had this friend of mine down there that was going to be, we were going to find like 10 different Craigslist ads with crazy ass fetishes. And then the friend was going to do each fetish with the person, and we're going to document it and kind of like try to get in the mind of the people who had the fetish of when this fetish started, why they like it. And we got some really crazy submissions and stuff like that. And we were about to do it, but then the friend of mine ended up, I wouldn't even call him a friend, to be honest. He was just like, he was just a crazy neighbor. Anyways, he went to jail, and I never saw him again.
Did he go to jail because of the documentary, or was that unrelated?
It was unrelated. He tried to break into this person's apartment and beat him up, and they locked the door, so they were neighbors. So he went in through the other door, his house, and because at the apartment complex, he started taking a vacuum and bashing through the wall to try to crawl through the hole and get to the neighbor. But the cops came, and that was the last I ever saw of him.
Jeez. All right. So with filmmaking, documentaries, like, is there anything in particular you're working on right now?
Not so much documentaries, but more than just like a movie. We're making a full-length movie.
Ooh.
And we haven't started it yet because everything's going like hectic right now. But I have I have the film crew and everything already ready. It's based out of Atlanta, this film crew. So they've been working on a lot of projects, but I've already got the screenplay and everything done, and I'm just waiting to pull the trigger on it to start filming.
I don't think fans realize this, but the videos that are in Dynamite are the ones that you produce yourself, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me and my friend Max Yoder, he's a skate friend of mine, and he films for Thrasher Magazine and all these other skate like videos, and he just comes over and we get to it and we edit it, film it, just a two-man crew.
Yeah, they're really well done. You ever work on any screenplays? Got anything on your computer that you've written?
Yeah. I got a full screenplay for my new movie coming up. It's a kind of a dark comedy and stuff like that. I got everything finished on that, and I'm just, like I said, waiting to start filming, you know, because I've been planning this video since I dropped out, this movie since I dropped out of film school. I've had this idea in my head forever. And now that I have A, the money, and B, the time and everything like that, I'm just really excited to get after it.
Why did you choose to go to Arizona for film school in the first place?
Because they had a really good film program that I was going to go to. And I also like Arizona. I was born in Arizona, even though I moved to Seattle when I was like super young, but I was actually born in Arizona. But I really wanted to go to Arizona because there's like a lot of good skating at the time too that I wanted to, you know, it's like sunny all year round. So I was just like, I'm going to skate and go to film school. In my mind, that was the dream.
So you grew up in Seattle and you went to Arizona to go to film school. And now you live in the Atlanta area now, right?
Oh, yeah.
What brought you to Atlanta?
Well, training in Seattle, as you may know, Aubrey, it's kind of like the black hole of the wrestling community. Like, no one's going to fly you from Seattle to Chicago or to New York or,
no,
you know, to Florida. You'd have to be like already a made man to kind of get that treatment. But I knew like coming up, there's no way people were going to fly my ass. So I decided to move across country to Florida. And in Florida, I ended up coming to Atlanta.
Well, it's a cool place to live, Aubrey. Even though it's East Coast. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's grown
on me. It's grown on me. I was kind of right. Like, if someone told me I'd be living in Georgia or Atlanta, I'd be like, there's no way. Like, I never saw myself doing that. So,
sure.
But now that I'm here, I love it.
Yeah.
Do you think you're going to be there long term?
Oh, yeah. We're buying this house that I have right now. And it's lucky.
Sweet.
Lucky enough to have like 13 acres of land. And,
wow. That's great.
Yeah, screw around all day and ride, you know, quads and or 4x4s and all these other build skate ramps and do crazy shit. So.
It's great, isn't it? I mean, you can shoot your little videos that you do for AEW. It's on your land and everything, right?
Yeah, and got a wrestling ring downstairs.
Wow.
That was the wrestling ring that was in Lance Archer's promo package, wasn't it?
Yeah, sure was.
Yeah, it's kind of advantage that it's like, oh yeah, Darby's here. We can just use his 13 acres and his wrestling ring. This is convenient.
Yeah, no.
Darby, I want to talk a little bit about sort of your straight edge lifestyle, because I know that's something that's kind of a really important to who you are as both a person and a performer. How did that come about?
Lots of reasons, but, you know, just growing up and having friends, close friends and family members kind of waste their life on drugs or alcohol. It kind of sucked to see that they couldn't reach their full potential in life. And then they're sitting around waste, like blaming it. Oh, I didn't make it to where I want in life because of alcohol or drugs. And I was sick of hearing these excuses. So I told myself a long time ago, if I fail in life, I can't blame it on the alcohol or the drugs. It's going to be 100% my fault. And I have no one to blame it on except my own self. So, and plus, you know, everything with my uncle growing up and all this crap. It just feels right for me. And since I've started with wrestling, I haven't taken a pain pill or anything. I don't even take aspirin. And that's a shock to some because of the stuff that I do. All I'd have to credit for is just stretching and, like, you know, icing and just eating, like taking care of yourself.
Yeah. 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 It's shocking every time I work with you and I'm like, oh yeah, here's just another crazy bump that Darby took and he's totally fine walking around after. Not dead.
It's the first time I've heard you don't even take aspirin, and I'm completely shocked because of the crazy things you do. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Wow.
I just take a lot of ice baths, and, you know, I have so much, like, stuff in my house, like, for, like, rehabbing, like massage guns and these, like, shock pads and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So speaking of pain, I know you've been working on your hand tattoo a little bit recently. So it's got the skeleton and whatnot. Like, it's, I can't imagine. I have a tattoo on my foot and it was the most painful thing I've ever been through.
this hand tattoo, and it's, I'm going in tomorrow to keep going up. Cause I'm going to get my whole like left side of my body tattooed.
That's so much.
Cause this is where I paint my face on this side. So I'm getting it touched up. I'm doing more, but it's like the hand by far is like, it was the weirdest pain. It was like, I sat in that chair for 7.5 hours, just straight to the hand. And I literally was like shaking. I couldn't even, I like lost track of where I was. And it was bad. It was really weird, but it was like the worst pain ever.
It's crazy when it's like the worst pain, but you're still willing to just go and keep doing it.
So you are getting like a skeleton on the left side of your body. Is that it?
Just the arm, just because I already have. Yeah, and it's probably go up to the neck and stuff like that. But I don't know if I'm going to touch up the face yet.
Right, right. The straight edge tattoo, was that the first one you ever got?
On my knuckles, yeah. That's when I was like 17, I got that.
Yeah, so you've got that one. You've got the one on your chest, Nothing's Over Till You're Underground. You've got the Relentless. My favorite one, and I've heard a couple versions of this story, is the Champ one you have on the inside of your lip.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did that come about?
Can't really see it right now, but... it was just a kind of a commitment to myself to become a champion at one point in my career, and, you know, never wanted to be the guy who just sat on his ass and was just happy to be there. It was a thing to be like, yo, like, you know, give me the ball and, you know, I'm never going to give it back type thing. And I felt like AEW has given me the opportunity to kind of show my vision of what I want. Yeah, and I feel like people, I always knew on the independent circuit I had what it took to be a big name. I just needed to be given the opportunity. So
exactly.
Well, you got that now. Now, Darby, you did mention in passing here just a few minutes ago your uncle. It's something that we've talked about on TV. Can you expound on that a little bit?
I actually don't think we've talked about it on TV too much.
Yeah, we kind of mentioned it, I guess.
Yeah, like there's a Road 2 episode on Fyter Fest. And, you know, I've always wanted that piece to be shown on TV. I think it would kind of clear up a lot of people's questions to why, you know, the face is painted, or to why a lot of things are with, you know, myself. But it's just when I was 5 years old and my uncle was drunk driving and I was in the car with him, he crashed the car and he ended up passing away from that. So I always wanted to use it somewhere in my life, especially when it came to wrestling. I just never knew how to kind of tell that story on the independent circuit. You know, it was like a weird type thing. So here it kind of was a lot easier for me to just tell everybody how it was, and it kind of explains why I paint my face, because when I first started training, my trainer at the time never wanted me to paint my face. He wanted me to be this like gas station attendant type character where I just like come in, and I was like I'm not gonna be a gas station fucking attendant. Like there's no way. It's just
that's gonna get over well.
Yeah, and they were just like, everybody's like, yeah, you can't paint your face. That's too corny. I'm like, no, like, fucking, yeah. I was like, but.
It's like, no, and actually, there's a proven track record on the indies that goes pretty well.
Yeah, everything ended up working out in the end.
Yeah, 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 you don't say.
So the chest tattoo, Nothing Is Over Till You're Underground, does that have to do with your uncle? And
yeah, that's to do with my uncle. But it's also to do with people giving up on their dreams or their like goals in life. There's a lot of people that set out to do something and then they say, oh, well, I'm 23. There's no way I can do it now. Like, you know, whatever it may be. But it's crazy because I've known some people that their whole life, they just wanted to be in a Hollywood movie. And they ended up getting that big break when they're 60. So if they were 23 and they said it was never going to happen because they felt they're too old at that time, they gave up. Like, nothing's over till you're dead. So you might as well just keep pushing at it and pushing at it and pushing at it. So it's just not being bound by age or, you know, all that stuff. You can do whatever the hell you want to do.
All right.
Look at DDP.
Yes, absolutely.
It's kind of the absolutely. Quintessential example of DDP.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, 35 yeah. years old starting wrestling.
Yeah. Look at Tony Schiavone and JR.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back on TV again.
Old
my God.
Farts.
Who would have
known? Farts.
Hey, easy.
Sorry.
No. We're talking with Darby Allin, and we talked about him being in film school, and another opportunity comes up, skateboarding, and we're going to talk to Darby about that here next.
We're here, AEW Unrestricted, Tony Schiavone, Aubrey Edwards, with our guest Darby Allin today. We talked a little bit about skateboarding in our first segment, but I wanted to touch on that again. Probably my favorite question to ask people who skateboard is, how many bones have you broken?
Let me see. Just from skateboarding alone or just wrestling?
Just from skateboarding.
Surprisingly, probably only two. My ankle and my foot.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
Have you broken more bones in wrestling or skateboarding?
Skateboarding.
No,
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I've only broken my elbow in wrestling, and that was like a freak accident.
Some of your skateboarding videos were seen on Tony Hawk's YouTube channel. How did that happen?
There's a skate contest in Seattle at the time called All City Showdown, and it's pretty much you've got 7 hours to film as much crazy stunts, skates, you know, anything you want on a skateboard. And then the winner gets all these prizes. And I told people for that thing, I was going to drop in on this lightning bolt sculpture in front of the Space Needle. And it's a, yeah, it's like that big, big thing. And I ended up going for it. And, thank God someone told me a second before I walked up there, like, yo man, you might want to put this helmet on.
Oh boy.
if you watch the video, if I didn't wear a helmet, I wouldn't be here today. Like I don't know how tall that is, like 16 feet or something like that. But I flew off the side of it and flew straight to my back, and I was coughing up blood and all this stuff. And then I ended up just like, you know, next thing I knew, Tony Hawk was interested in buying the clip. And now, you know, everything works out, because that was back in 2011. And now fast forward to now, Tony Hawk, like he like retweeted the video of me jumping on Janela's back at All Out in the thumbtack skateboard. And, you know, now he follows me on Instagram, which is like cool and stuff like that. So we're definitely want to get more like work with Tony, kind of come full circle, because a lot of things it's weird because a lot of things open up more when I'm a wrestler than when I was just skateboarding with skateboarding. Now I got companies sending me like shoes, boards, clothes. So it's nice.
You recently released your own board, didn't you?
Yeah, on spinebustermerch.com. Like we had Darby Allin coffin boards with like my cartoon on the bottom of it. And those sold out, but we have more coming in stock soon.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a nice thing. Just these little coffin shaped skateboards. It's something I've always wanted to do. So it's really sick.
Coffin shaped skateboards. I love it. Yeah. I do.
You can actually ride them. You know, I posted a video on my Instagram of me actually riding it, just to show people that you can like do flip tricks and ride ramps with it. So.
Right. Talk about your involvement on the MTV show Ridiculousness.
Oh yeah, that was another fun thing to make money when I was like super broke. I was super broke, and I had my friend was a producer for that show. So she would always send me messages like, hey, you know, if you have anything crazy, send it this way. So we kept filming stuff like every day for that. And just, you know, you get paid for it. And it definitely helped out, because, you know, I wasn't making money working at the 99 cent store to really live. So, yeah, it was cool. I've done a lot of crazy stuff for them. And, you know, Aubrey would know the gum wall in Seattle.
Oh, yeah. I hate that gum wall.
The gum wall in Seattle?
Yeah, have you not heard about the gum wall?
No, so smart me up on this. I'm old.
So basically by Pike Place Market, where like the first Starbucks is and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
There's this little alleyway you walk down, and they literally have, it's like all brick building, and they just have like chewing gum stuck from like as high as people can reach all the way down to the bottom. And it's this, I find it really gross, but people like to visit it. People take their wedding photos in front of it. Uh-huh. And I'm like, it's just gum. They had to actually scrape it all off and like repair the wall, and then immediately within like a week everyone had refilled it with gum again.
Yeah, it's just like a bunch of strangers walking by chewing their gum, and they stick it on the wall, and it makes this huge collage of art. But for Ridiculousness, I like licked the whole entire wall and ate the side off of it, and
yep.
I chewed that up, and that was it was fun. I got tested to make sure I didn't have any like diseases, because people people would tell me, like, after I did it, like, it tasted good, to be honest, because it was, like, mint. but after I did it, everybody's like, you know how much rats piss on that wall? Or you know how much homeless people, like, have sex on that wall? And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, there's no homeless people. But people kept saying this, like, crazy stuff. It's kind of like,
right.
And then the next day I woke up, and, like, I don't know if it was my mind telling me, like, something was wrong, but I just kept, like, freaking out about it. Like, oh, with my mouth, like, do I got, like, what's going on? So I went to the doctor, and, like, no, you're fine.
Yeah. Yeah, fine. That was your mind telling you that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've talked about skateboarding, and we've talked about being on the show and you doing crazy things. You are homeless. You lived in a car for 3 years by choice.
Yeah.
3 years in a car.
Why?
Talk about that.
Because it was kind of a commitment to myself. Like if I couldn't make something out of this wrestling thing, I never wanted to be able to like sit in a house or have that comfortability. I wanted to make as much money just in wrestling because I wasn't making any money. I couldn't afford to like have my own place. So, and I didn't want to be a freeloader who just came to people's houses and like slept on their couch. So I told myself, like, until I can get on my own 2 feet and afford something monthly, I am not going to like, I'm just going to like live in my car. And I liked doing it because it made me work so hard. And, you know, like, now I have the freedom to maybe like sleep in a couple extra hours if I wanted to, but in that car in the summertime in Atlanta, and Tony could, you know, attest to this. It's like the humidity is like super crazy. So you'd wake up at 7 a.m. and you'd have to be on your feet going, you can't sleep in that car, and it made you work hard. And you
could, right.
So I like that feeling of just going. Like I never like to get comfortable and like, you know, like I said, I don't have Wi-Fi at my house. I don't have a TV at my house right now even. So I know it sounds like kind of weird, but like I just kind of like...
It's minimalistic.
I try to be outside as much as possible.
Makes sense. So when you're living in your car, what's a typical day look like?
I parked right at this... there's this hotel and it was right in the city, right connected to the Anytime Fitness where I would work out. So I'd park in the parking spot for the visitors. So I'd wake up, go down to the Anytime Fitness, work out. I had my George Foreman grill, and that's where I'd cook food in the bathroom.
And oh yeah, I've heard about that.
Yeah, I'd cook my meal, then I'd go probably to Barnes and Nobles and read poetry or some shit, whatever, like at Barnes and Nobles for a couple hours and like have a coffee. And then I would go skate, and then I would just like travel around parts of Georgia that I'd never been to. But I just like drive and see where I ended up, and I'd always like, you know, I don't know, it was fun, it was lots of fun.
So let me get this straight, and Aubrey, you said you heard about this, you cooked on the George Foreman grill in the bathroom, is that right?
Yeah, the Anytime Fitness. You just like have the shower water running, and then because it kind of like takes away some of the smell, just because I don't want people to like smell a whole like, you know, salmon dinner being cooked in the bathroom.
That is a great story.
The bathrooms have plugs.
What did your family say about this at that time?
I didn't really tell them that much, to be honest. I was just like trying to be like, you know, oh yeah, everything's going good with wrestling. You know, like, don't worry, everything's good. I'm staying at a friend's house. But like, you know, but now like I told them honestly, and you know, they just didn't know that much, you know, because I don't want to tell them that like I'm living in the city in my car, you know, it's kind of sketchy at parts, you know, so it's cool.
So I don't know if the timeline lines up, but I think you were homeless living in your car when you met your now wife, Priscilla, who's an awesome independent wrestler on indie scene. Is that like, how does dating work when you're homeless?
Well, when I first start talking to her, I just go to concerts and then we'd go sit in my car and then just pretty much just go. I don't know. It was fucking weird, to be honest. It's just like, I don't know. Cause like you can't, I don't know. It was fun though. We'd go on road trips all the time and like go places all the time. And she was cool. Cause she would like sleep in the car too.
Oh,
it works.
Yeah. Trooper.
That's tremendous. Now you, WWE approached you to, invite you to come down at the Performance Center. Talk about that a little bit for us.
So back then, they asked me if I was interested in coming down. And at the time, I was like, not trying to sound like I'm too good for it, but I was already like, yo, like, you either want me or you don't. I'm not going to try out for this because you already know what I can do based off the company I was wrestling for. They worked so close with WWE, and I was already wrestling all their wrestlers like, you know, Chris Hero or, you know, Velveteen Dream or, you know, all these people. So I'm like, you already know what I can do. I'm not just going to sit here and, you know, that
they want you to do the dog and pony show.
Well, that and the tryouts, like the people I see get tryouts, it's such a joke. It doesn't mean anything anymore. It's just like,
right.
I'm not going to sit here and be this clown who like either tell me, but then I thought about it. I was like, fuck, I don't even want to go there anymore. And then that's when I started talking to Cody more and more. And I told him, like, look, I see the writing on the wall. I ain't going to play this game where I go there and be a cruiserweight 205 live person. Like, I ain't playing that game, because then my body of work, my art, my promos will never see the light of day. And then that's where I was like, I'm not playing these games with these people. Like, there's 1,000 people there and you forget they even exist half the time. And I'm not going to be locked in a performance center. So I was like, I'm not doing this. I'd rather, you know, so I made that very clear to Cody, and, you know, the rest is history.
Right. On the independent circuit there, obviously you're very, very popular to the fans in AEW, and rightfully so. I mean, you've earned it. What they see is what they get. But on the independent circuit, you didn't always have such a positive reaction to some of the things that went on. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. A lot of times I feel like I got pigeonholed, and, you know, right, kind of just obviously to a degree, it's my own damn fault, because I started wrestling in a year or so. And I moved out of Seattle about a year and a half, 2 years. I moved out of Seattle to start wrestling all over the indies. So I was kind of learning as I was going. I wasn't ready to, like, really, you know, I didn't even know how to put a match together, to be honest. I was just going out there, and I knew to separate myself, I'd have to, like, do some crazy, crazy stuff. So that's what I ended up doing. But that's why I was so strict on myself with living in the car, because as I was living in the car, I was training every day in a ring, because I never wanted to be comfortable with being the crash test dummy. And so, like, obviously I like doing crazy stuff given my history of skateboarding. So,
yeah,
right.
You know, but the thing is, it's fun, but there's a difference from it being fun and you wanting to do it to compare it, you have to do it. Mm-hmm. And I never want to have to do anything.
Love that.
So I want it to, it's just a lot of people. You go into the independents and sometimes they expect you get to the building and they'll tell you, oh, yo, by the way, like, we have this idea for you to jump off this balcony tonight. And I'm like, whoa, like, if I wanted to, that's one thing. But if you tell me to do it, like, go fuck yourself. Like, I'm not playing your games.
Right, right.
And then I just saw, like, you know, as much as I was getting beat up on the indies, and then you would, like, check your social media, and, like, half of these matches that you do, they don't get released till another year and a half or something. And I was like, what's the deal? Like, just release it for free on YouTube and get more eyes. You're not going to be a millionaire having your little indie show get $10 like monthly subscription. No one gives a fuck. So it's like, just release it for the wrestlers, like, help them out. Like, so people can see their body of work and see the light of day. I was sick of waiting for my matches to get released. And I was getting pissed off because I felt like I'd, like, what's the point of killing myself if it's going to be released next, like, you know, next year? Like, I don't see the point in that. So I had it was a love-hate relationship with a lot of independents. But.
All right, Darby, coming up, we're going to hear about how you, Darby Allin, got into AEW.
We're here with Darby Allin, talking about all of his skateboarding past, his movie making past, his skateboarding current and movie making current. You touched on a little bit about how Cody was the one that you got in contact with for AEW. Can you talk a little bit about how that all came to be and sort of your journey into AEW?
Yeah, I heard from a friend that Cody was asking what the deal with me was. And no, but, you know, I had a match with Pentagon Jr. at Northeast Wrestling on one of their more bigger shows. And that was actually, I feel like, one of the first matches where I kind of held my own, so to speak, and wasn't really so much, you know, just out there doing a stunt only, you know what I mean? So I put a lot into that match, and I was training for that particular match probably for a good 2 months, just with, like, a friend, where I'm like, all right, you're gonna do all Pentagon's moves to me, and I'm gonna, like, try to find all these reversals out of them, and just, like, really put a lot of thought into that match, because those opportunities didn't come often to have big matches like that. You know, I've wrestled, like, so Cody ended up seeing that match, and then he was asking, you know, some people about me. And then, you know, I met Cody a long time ago, but when he first met me, I was just the crash test dummy. You know what I mean? So it's like, oh, there's the Darby guy. All he would say is like, hey, please don't die tonight. That's like the only conversation I really had with him. But
I think that's all I say to you at work.
Yeah, but it ended up working out with this Pentagon match. I remember that was kind of a game changer for sure. And then I just kept messaging Cody and telling him like my, you know, goals and like what I want out of everything. And just, I knew AEW was the place for me, you know, and because if I fail, it's kind of my own fault here, because I've gotten so much creative freedom. If people don't like it, then, you know, it's like, hey man, you got to take a step back and your shit's not working. So, but here it's like, I knew I was going to have a fair chance. So that's where, just talked to Cody and got the ball rolling. And, you know, I think he wanted to prove a point with people, with me. That's why my first match here was against Cody.
How was that for you? Because I know for me, it's my favorite match to date.
It was good. I really thought what I wanted out of it, I got out of it. But going into it, there was a lot of like, all right, man, it's you got to show these people, because first impressions are everything. That's why, like, that match, I went like, you know, 100 miles, kind of like I do every match, but like particularly that match. That match, I knew I had to like get a lot out of it, because if I'm in that ring with Cody, for example, and I shit the bed, everybody's going to be like, yo, this, you put faith in this guy to wrestle you, you know, like, come on, get out of here.
I remember match planning that day, Cody comes to me and goes, so I don't know if you know, but Darby's really fast. I'm like, I have a rough idea. I think we're good.
Darby, and then Chris Jericho's impact on your career. He wanted you to bring the skateboard to the ring. You wrestled him on television. Where do you rank wrestling Chris Jericho on television and moving your career forward?
That was a big step. That was huge, because that was week three of TV.
Yep.
Right.
And for the whole company, and especially Jericho, because he obviously has a lot of say in who he's going to want to wrestle. It's not just going to be like, yo, we're going to have you wrestle some random person. He's going to be like, if it's the main event on Dynamite, he's got to, like, you know, sign up for it too. So sure. Like, the thing is, for them to have a commitment in me week three to be in that spot on national television was a huge. So that was validation for hard work. And it definitely helped, because it put me in that stratosphere of, I can actually hang with these main event guys, and actually I don't look out of place in the main event, because I would think I did more than enough to, you know, show my like, you know, toughness that night, especially with the hands behind the back spots. And
oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, you've done so many great things, but to me, the match at Revolution against Sammy Guevara was the best one. The best one that I've called, put it that
way.
Yeah.
Yeah. That match, Sammy and me are a lot alike. And when I said that last week on the promo, like, look at me face to face, where like, you'll see yourself, because we came from the same indies. We had the same stories. We had the same struggles with whatever it may be of wanting to just, like, you know, take it to the extra mile. And he's crazy just like me. And so I knew going into that match, give us the ball in that fucking match. Like, this is going to just, you know, that's why right away I knew I had to do something different. That's why I jumped him from the start, because I wasn't going to go in there, especially after he like smashed my throat with the skateboard. I wasn't going to go in there and just wait for us to like lock up. I just wanted to like rip him apart. So I think that's it was a super fun match. I liked it.
And, you know, we have a lot of coaches in AEW, Dean Malenko being one of them, who is a grumpy old curmudgeon, doesn't seem to like anything at all, but he really likes you. And I know that from a fact, because Dean and I have ridden together, and he always puts you over about not only how hard you work, but how your matches are. And has he given you a lot of advice since he started? You guys have started together?
Yeah, I remember the night I wrestled Pac at Bash at the Beach. He was the agent for that match, and just picking his brain and just on the little thing, like the little tiniest things, that I can't get enough of that. Like, that's my favorite thing to do, is go up to guys like Dean or, you know, Jim Ross or yourself or Taz, whoever it may be, like, and just get like little tiny, like just talk to you guys about, oh, I'm going to do this in this in the match, and just like kind of hear your guys' like thought or input on things. But with guys like Dean, I just want to learn as much, because I don't know what it is, but I've been watching him like forever, his stuff from Japan or WCW or whatever of his. And there's something about that type of wrestler to me. They seem so professional and so like, I don't know how you like say it. They just seem like in like a class of their own. They seem, mm-hmm. It's like, it's crazy because they seem so just talented. It's like insane to me, like watching like just the footwork and, you know, like every little thing means so much, like such snappy, kind of like, you know, like Dynamite Kid or something. So right. I really like that. And I feel like, to me, a lot of, I don't know, I feel like a lot of like with younger guys on the indies, like I kind of want, I don't know what it is, but I just don't feel like there's that type of wrestler anymore. I haven't seen anybody like, you know, back when like Dean and that everybody, like Eddie and everybody was, it just doesn't seem like there's that much young guys like that anymore. And I don't know if it's because social media is giving people, you know, you get kind of more popular pretty fast with social media on for wrestling. So I don't know if people aren't working as hard or what it is, but that's just my thought on it. I don't know if people like just don't work that hard because they have one match and someone sees a GIF of them doing something crazy and then they get
all GIFs.
They get booking. They get bookings off this one match, and then they don't have to. Like, oh, I don't have to train anymore. I'm already a made man because someone saw my 6:30 online or something like that. I'm getting this. But to me, wrestling is just like any other professional sport. They're not going to stop training in the NFL. They're not going to stop training in the NBA. That's why I got a ring. That's why I got a ring downstairs at my house. I always train. I always want to get better. I always want to think of different ways. And just treating this as the sport it is, and, you know, just bust your ass. I don't know.
Well, would that be the hallmark of relentless, being the tattoo on your back, back your neck?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah. We had that training session with Malenko down here in Atlanta a couple months ago. And I remember just like, you know, I know it sounds very selfish, but like, I'm like, yo, come to my house and let's just roll around downstairs and like, just shoot the shit in the basement. And I really just wanted to, I don't know, like I could sit for hours. I just want to get better. And there's like, I just feel like I need to get better and I can't, I don't know. It's just weird.
Well, you know, you're obviously getting better, and obviously the fans take note. Tell you just a quick story. My oldest son, Matt, who's 37, lives in New York City, is a big wrestling guy, big time, watches everything. And after the Revolution match, he sent me a text. He said, Darby Allin's the best guy you got.
Ooh.
And listen, it's not he's not a casual wrestling fan. He's big time. So the fan reaction to you has now been, and I'm just giving you that as an example, how the fan reaction to you has been tremendous. And you have to appreciate that. What does that mean to you?
It means a lot, because in my mind, I know, like, in my mind, I still feel like the Darby who is working at the 99-cent store. So, like, having people, you know, get this reaction, I'm like, damn, it's, like, weird, because it's just surprising that everything happened so fast, if that makes sense. Like, and obviously, like, I put the work in, but, like, I just – to have those people, like, give a damn is all you could ask for.
Yeah, well, you're one of the guys, when the music hits, the fans pop. I know we got the video board, so they know who's coming out, but it's your music that they know it now, you know? I mean, that used to be in the day – when you would hear Hulk Hogan's music or the Road Warriors music, people would pop. Now they hear Darby Allin's music and they'll go crazy. I noticed that from sitting out there. Do you notice that?
I always expect the worst. I know it sounds crazy, but I heard this old story of Ozzy Osbourne. Henry Rollins was standing next to Ozzy Osbourne, and Ozzy was about to go out, and Ozzy was like panicking, like just pacing back and forth. And Henry Rollins went up to him and said, "What's wrong?" He's like, "The people, are they going to care tonight?" He's like, "Of course they're going to care tonight. You're fucking Ozzy Osbourne." Like, so like, not saying I'm Ozzy Osbourne, but just saying like, I always expect the worst, you know? It's like, right. It's like weird. It's just like habit. Like, I'm like, oh, are they going to, like, is it going to, but like the biggest reaction that surprised the hell out of me was Atlanta when I came out with the skateboard to help Moxley with the whole group of the Inner Circle, and Jeff Cobb was out there. I remember that was insane to me because everyone in the back's like, oh, he's just a hometown boy. They're like, wait, he lived in Seattle his whole life. He's not a hometown boy.
Exactly. So, you're a transplant to Atlanta.
Yeah. So it was that was insane.
Well, it's your drive that makes you what you are. I mean, it really is. If you think about this, you always want to better yourself. You always want to get better. There's nothing wrong with that. And I always think the great ones in the sport, in any sport, in any vocation, want to do that. So consider yourself one of those. And never fault yourself by saying, boy, I'm too hard on myself, or I'm a defeatist. Nah, that's the way you are, and that's why you've come so far, as you've said so quickly. I know you and I worked together a little bit on MLW, and I saw some of the crazy things you did, and I went, holy shit, I can't believe what I'm seeing. And, you know, I would always talk to you about, Darby, got to take care of yourself, and every time I see you do something crazy, I'm thinking, I hope that kid's okay, because you got a great career ahead of you, man. You really do. What's been the most challenging thing about doing matches on television compared to just doing them on the independent circuits? I mean, you're talking about millions of people now. You're talking about having to work to the cameras as well. What's been the most challenging thing?
The most challenging thing to me is just the timing of everything and being like, when you put a match together now and not wanting to, you got to like space it out more because you don't want to give anything away during the commercial, unless like that's the point, you know. But like the thing is it's just like pacing the match. I remember the first night I was on TV was against Jimmy Havoc on episode 2 of Dynamite, and I remember the ref's headset wasn't working, and I did this like we went to all our craziest stuff like when we were on commercial, and the ref's like, the headset, it's broke, and I'm like, all right, well, it's just like that type of stuff's like crazy to me.
Right.
But it's fun though. I really like the challenge, and I love playing to the cameras. That's like my favorite thing. It's just like, you know,
it's storytelling.
Finding the camera. Yeah, finding the camera, and like, you know, because I watch wrestling now and then, just like these moments when I watch like older wrestling, in the moments where like they just get a close up of someone's face after like something, it just like it hits so much more to me than, you know, so.
What's been your favorite moment in AEW so far?
I'd either say, like, for me or just the whole company as itself.
I mean, for you.
I'd say probably my debut, either my debut or Wrestling Jericho. Like, those two things, just because, like I said, it's validation that they have faith in you. They have faith in you to be like, here. You want to talk this game about wanting this opportunity. You've got this opportunity to show us what the hell you got. And I always like that.
So tell us how you came up with the name Darby Allin.
Well, Darby is from Darby Crash. He died of he's an old punk rock singer. He's dead now. Mm-hmm. Killed himself. And then Allin is from Gigi Allin. He's another punk rock singer who he's dead now. But
I'm seeing a trend. I don't know if it's a good one.
No, but the thing is, the reason I like those names is because it's kind of ironic because I'm straight edge and they both died with like drug related issues.
Right.
Like, the thing is, they're such captivating people. You get so like enthralled in their personalities and you remember them forever. And I just remember them like growing up. And the big thing about it, a lot of people don't know, is that movie, The Joker, for example, that just came out, that Todd Phillips directed. His first ever film was a documentary on Gigi Allin, where he followed Gigi Allin around. And Gigi Allin did the craziest things. And Todd Phillips, a lot of people think The Joker is kind of based off of Gigi Allin. So it's just like, you know, picking into the human brain is an interesting thing.
So what's next? Just continuing to get better? Is that it for you?
You know, yeah.
Every day, seemingly, like, right?
Yeah, continue to get better. And just within wrestling, just getting that main event on a pay-per-view is, to me, I feel like it's the next step that I need.
Right.
And then life goal-wise is just film this movie and finish my skate video that I've been working on, which is another thing that's kind of challenging because I've been filming a skate video and it's so hard because I can't risk to get hurt. But I want to show people that, like, I still, like, very passionate about skating, and the skateboarding that I'm doing on TV isn't a money grab. I'm not trying to, like, cash in on the industry of skateboarding. I'm actually a very passionate skateboarder, and I really care a lot about it. You know, it made me who I am today. And my goal is just to film one more skate video part, which is craziness. And I've been going on trips and stuff like that, getting these tricks, but it's really hectic. Try not to, like, get hurt.
Right. Jeez. And, you know, things were working so well in the 2020 and big crowds, and then the coronavirus hit and we're all, you know, kind of shut in. Did that slow you down at all as far as working out and continuing to drive towards your craft?
No, because I'm very fortunate enough to have this ring downstairs and the skate ramp stuff. And I have a gym that I go to, like a private gym that I go to, like 30 minutes from my house. And very, very fortunate to have all that stuff during this time, because if I didn't have all that, I would definitely be going like crazy. So we got a lot of positive things.
Darby, you've been a sensation, buddy, and I'm glad to be here for the ride. And hopefully that this will continue for you, because we knew this before you told us all this stuff, that you've worked very hard and you're very driven and determined. So we appreciate you talking to us.
It's incredible to see everything you did on the Indies and then just seeing it like pay off week after week. It's awesome, man. Great job.
Shout out to Chris Ross.
Hell yeah.
Okay.
Oh my God.
our thanks to Darby Allin. A reminder to subscribe to the AEW Unrestricted Podcast, because you can subscribe for free wherever you get your podcast. That's right. And don't forget, AEW Dynamite each and every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock at 7 Central, only on
TNT.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm Tony Schiavone.
I'm Aubrey Edwards.
For Darby Allin, thanks for listening, everybody, to AEW Unrestricted.